Good evening, everybody. Friday Night Live. It's going to be a little bit of a short show. I'm afraid we have a full house. Not with you guys, though lovely though it is. I have a full house here, and so some friends are coming through. So, sorry, I'm afraid you're going to the back of the line. I'm still doing the show, but we have a full house, so I'm going to just do an hour tonight, although it will be even more intense. Even more intense. You're wearing a hat. You need something to toss dramatically tonight. No, I just haven't gotten around to get a haircut, and I look like my hair looks like startled steel wool. So I really can't do much of that. So yeah, looks good. And thank you everyone for dropping by. Naturally, of course, I am thrilled and overjoyed if you send me any donations or support. I would be absolutely thrilled if you would be able to support me, freedomman.com/donate, if you're listening to this later. But hey, who needs donation pitches when we can get straight into philosophy? Because that's what it's all about. All right, let's get to your questions, comments. I agree wholeheartedly with what you said about superheroes and courage. I try to use Jesus as a superhero to be more virtuous and James Bond as a superhero to motivate me to dress well and to work out. And I try to use Steph to motivate me to be an awesome dad. Donation tomorrow sometime. Bedtime for my amazing four-year-old son now. Yeah. You know, there's a funny thing, too, that happens with regards to all of this superhero stuff, which is all superheroes are part of a suicide squad. Just so you know, like all superheroes are part of a suicide squad. Because, and by superheroes, I don't just mean, you know, like the Marvel and X-Men and all that. I mean, the superheroes are the people who survive such improbable things. I mean, if you've ever seen Casino Royale, there's this opening sequence. And, you know, you can tell when Ian Fleming, he wrote some pretty sparkling dialogue. You can tell when the Ian Fleming stuff shows up because all the intelligent people perk up. But there's this bit at the beginning where James Bond is chasing this black guy who's racing through a construction yard, hanging from cranes, jumping from here to there, and nobody gets injured. They barely seem out of breath. So physical imperviousness, the physical imperviousness of superheroes, and everybody knows it's kind of the joke, you know, that the bad guys shoot and they just shoot all around the good guys. The good guys pop off one shot and it goes right through the forehead of the bad guys. Whenever you have superheroes who survive, and not just survive, but flourish through ridiculously improbable things, you know, like in Casino Royale, James Bond is in this car. And it flips and flips, and all he is just kind of dazed, and he's got a couple of tiny flesh wounds and stuff like that. It's like, no, if you've known people who've been in car accidents, significant car accidents, you know, oftentimes that is a lot of leftover stuff. You know, I can't move my neck this way, and, you know, my ribs never quite set properly, and, you know, there could be internal damage. There's just a lot of lingering stuff. And you know the way it always goes in movies, they're, you know, in a fight, and they get that cool cut. You know, they get the cut that goes along the jawline. That's like the cool cut. They've always got to have then the bruises, and they just look more macho and masculine. You know, like Bruce Willis was one of the king of best beaten up guys. You know, he's running across glass and then he's fine. You always have this thing, you know, a guy gets a pipe to the ribs, a heavy lead pipe to the ribs, and he's like, you know, and he's down. And then like literally 30 seconds, he's up and fighting again. No, that's not life. That's not life at all. And so they're inviting you, the root of the invulnerable hero is to lure you to war, right? Just so you understand it, the root of the invulnerable hero is the lure to war. Because if you've been raised with, you know, like the Lone Ranger, right? He's battling what they used to call the Indians, the cowboys and Indians, right? And, you know, the Indians are doing nothing and just shooting and missing. And the cowboys, every time they shoot, an Indian flies off the back of a horse. So what they're trying to do is they're trying to give you ridiculous, improbable odds so that they can lure you to war. Because if you get a sense of, you know, you're shooting at a guy, he's shooting back at you. A lot of times it's kind of 50-50, you know, particularly if you're new to war, he's new to war. A lot of times it's just kind of 50-50. Who's going to win? Now, there are a few people who are insanely talented And all again, yeah, they get the cool cap, but they never lose an arm or a leg, like many real car accidents. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, the bruised ribs and yeah, 20-minute parkour action scenes. Oh yeah, it's just keep. It's insane, and it's there so that you go to war with a ridiculous sense of your own immortality. All right, that's what this stuff is for. You go to war with a ridiculous sense of your own immortality. You don't have any sense of the odds that you face in a war. Yeah, John Wick fights hundreds of people and gets dozens of what should be highly debilitating injuries and just keeps fighting. No one's that good and lucky. And you know, afterwards they're like, but then they're fine. Then they're fine. Injuries are brutal. Injuries are absolutely brutal. And if you've had significant injuries, most of us have, right? Most of us have had significant injuries at one time or another. They're really tough, and there's a lot of rehabilitation. I mean, you look at the VA, right? Go to the VA hospital and look at the people there getting rehab, and then tell me about action movies, right? So you understand, it's there to get you to go to war. This is not accidental. It's there to give you a ridiculous sense of your own competence so that you can go to war. And it's always the same thing. It's always the same thing. It's really annoying, because it literally gets people killed. Yeah, if you see the Ukraine war footage, yeah, it's... there was a story, and I've mentioned this some years ago. It really haunted me. Very short story or comment about a guy from the First World War. A guy from the First World War, he said, you know, I went to war, and I thought, because I'd read all these stories and I'd seen all these paintings, I thought that war was, you know, riding up a hill on a horse with your sword out. He said, that's not war. War is sitting in a disease-ridden muddy trench when some asshole 20 miles away pushes a button and blows you up. That's what it is. You see these drones chasing after people and stuff raining down from the sky, and it's guided missiles and so on. It's barely a fight. It's barely a fight, but they're always trying to get you. Lord of the Rings does the same thing, right? Lord of the Rings does the same thing. And it's always this unbelievably wretched. And it's murderous. It's murderous what happens. Because it's always the same story, which is some guy is decent at amateur stuff, right? He's decent at amateur stuff. And then he goes up against the most hardened, skilled, bloodthirsty, cold-blooded killers in the entire universe. And takes them all down. You know, remember, was it the famous Star Wars, right? What was he? He flew some amateur dipshit airplanes, and he said, I was pretty good at bombing womp rats in Beggar's Canyon. I don't know why this line is. I had the LP of Star Wars when I was a kid. So somebody, and you look at Paul Atreides in Dune, all of this sort of stuff. He's an amateur. And he goes up against people who've had 20 or more years of experience, have killed dozens, if not hundreds of people. And the rank amateur goes up and carves through them like a knife through butter. They are the most ferocious killers in the universe. And the amateur, right, so you understand. So people will say, well, you know, I've done a little shooting and you know, I'm pretty good at throwing things. So yeah, I can shoot and throw a grenade. I'm kind of an amateur. And they lure you in. It's luring you into a meat grinder. It's luring you into a disassembly line, luring you in. Well, you know, you, as a rank amateur, will be able to take on all these battle-hardened warriors and cleave through them. It'll be like a combine harvester going through the weep. I used to bullseye womp rats in my T-16 back home. They're not much bigger than 2 meters. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. It's a lure. It's a lure. It's propaganda to give you an insane sense of the odds you'll face in an actual battle. I mean, the stormtroopers, right? The famous stormtroopers, right? Now, I get that he needed people who looked like robots, so you could literally dehumanize the enemy, because they're all in these suits, these stormtroopers, right? In Star Wars, they're all in these battle armor, right? The fuck does that armor do? Okay. So they go down with the armor or without. The armor doesn't do anything. So all of these incredibly trained, battle-hardened stormtroopers go up against some person who's never fought before, and he just carves them up like a turkey. Carves them up like a turkey. Paul Atreides gets into the Fremen by killing a guy who's done hand-to-hand combat for 20 or more years. The guy looks like he's like 45, the black guy that he fights. So he's never fought to the death before, ever. He's had some training. He's had some training. And he goes up against a guy who for a quarter century has been engaged in hand-to-hand combat and killing things and people, and he beats him. Yeah, Han Solo walks around with a pistol and a leather jacket, and if you shoot them, it's always they miss, right? Like, oh, my arm, you know, and then everything's fine, right? The fancy armor didn't even repel pointy sticks and rocks, right? And what they do is they infect you with the dream of magic so that you can destroy the rational odds of your own demise. So, oh, you've got the Force. You've got the words of command. You've got magic. Don't worry, kid. We're going to take you to war, and you're going to get the shit blown up out of you. But don't worry. You're going to have magic, so you'll win, and you'll be the guy who carves through everything. Now, are there guys who carve through everything? Of course there are, because it's a bell curve. Some people get hit by the first bullet, and some people don't get hit by the 100th bullet. It's just a matter of random chance. At that point, it's a little bit of skill here, right? So, I mean, you see these scenes with the Jedi. Oh, you see, the odds are just so different with the Jedi because they have the Force and they have magic. And they literally roam into arenas with hundreds of exquisitely programmed AI, perfectly lasered battle robots, and carve them up like turkeys because it's cool, right? So they're just giving you these cool moves and they're giving you this cool music. And that's to suck you into the giant disassembly machine of the military-industrial complex without giving you a sense of your odds. Ewoks going up against the galactic army and winning, yeah. You know, it's a good line in Casino Royale, right? Where the woman says, thank you for the tip, Matt. The woman says, doesn't it bother you to kill people? And he says, well, I wouldn't be very good at my job if it did. Right? So the people who want easy prey will lure you into battle with these insane, ridiculous, it's never going to happen, there's no chance. But they, oh no, you're going to be a medal and you're going to be one in a thousand guys who doesn't get hurt and comes out without a scratch and this, that, and the other. And it's like, yeah. And of course, they'll give those guys medals and so on. Now, there are some people who definitely have a skill, right? So you think of Baron von Richthofen, the Red Baron in the First World War. He, you know, what, 100 kills or something like that. So, but all of that, so there's some natural talent and so on, but it's not just that. There's also just good luck. So the way that it works with aerial combat is, let's say you get a slight edge, right? You have, say it's 60-40 because you've got some talent, some 3D processing thing in your brain that just works really well. So it's 60-40. Okay. So you win your first battle. And then what happens is you're more likely to win your next battle because you've won your first battle. So you've got some skill and experience now too, right? And then maybe it's 65-35 to win your next battle. So then you win your next battle. Then maybe it's 70-30 or whatever. Like, and maybe it goes up a percentage point each time, but you're still lucky because any stray bullet could have taken you down. Any stray bullet, any crashing into anyone, right? Just being too low to the ground, any stray bullet, any aerial collision, any too low to the ground, whatever. Heck, you could have got struck by lightning on the way back to the airbase. Anything could have happened, right? So what happens is there's people who have a slight edge because of their skill, and then they're just lucky from there on in, right? And the skill aids in the luck, but there's still a huge amount of luck. And then they gain so much experience that they become very hard to beat. But the gaining of that experience is somewhat accidental. They just happen to, you know, they just happen to roll well on each, and, you know, 65-30, 65-35, 70-30, 75-25, and their odds go up, and then they become very hard to beat, for sure. But it's not like they were just naturally great and just could kill all of those people in the air. They were just lucky. And to give you the fantasy that magic and miracles and grit and willpower and determination and being on the side of rightness, goodness, truth, and justice will keep you safe is a lie. And it's a fatal lie. It has been a fatal lie for hundreds of millions of men throughout human history. You get into war, you're screwed. You get into a war, there's no good outcome. I mean, if it's some defensive war, you're saving your family, your homeland, whatever, right? But you get into a war, well, what's your best odds? What's your best odd? That you go back whole in body but shattered in spirit. I saw some anti-war film about the rich kids and the poor kids. And the rich kids, you know, the rich young men are off partying in a disco and picking up girls and having a great time because they were too wealthy to end up in the army. And the poor kids are dragged into the army and thrown on the battlefield. And the end of it was just haunting, that the rich kid was lying back in his bed moaning because he was getting a blowjob. And then it flipped to the poor kid who was bleeding out on the battlefield and moaning in just kind of the same way. Haunting, haunting, haunting stuff. Richard the Lionheart was a great crusade leader and king of England, gets killed by some French kid with a crossbow. Well, yeah, I mean, my ancestors came over with William the Conqueror in 1066, and William the Conqueror just got hit with an arrow through the eye and died. Whoops, whoopsie. Right? Crazy. Yeah, it's, and yeah, there are people who, you know, like the Fatality, that video game player, very skilled, you know, exercised well, obviously hair trigger reflexes. And I don't know, have you ever had the experience where you're playing with a video game guy and I'm not too bad at first person shooters, pretty good. But I remember there was a guy I worked with once, I couldn't beat him. I think I beat him maybe once, and that was half by accident. But I just couldn't beat him. He seemed to know exactly where I was. Didn't matter if I changed my path. He always had the right weapon loaded. He always sniped me from a distance. You ever have those people where it's just like, I don't know how you're doing it? Because, you know, oftentimes I was that guy who could get everyone else, like almost no matter what. But yeah, have you ever had that with a video game person? Yeah, fortunate son. Yeah, yeah. You ever have that, some video game person, you're online, just, yeah, can't win. It's almost like, it's ridiculous. It's almost impossible. I don't know what sort of sixth sense they have. But, and of course, then what happens is you get kind of jumpy, you get kind of jittery, you look around, you change your strategies randomly, and the sense of impending doom is so heavy that you're like, can't win, right? Yeah, I remember when Quake 3 came out, I would regularly win, right? Like 25 people or whatever it was playing, I would at least 50 to 60% of the time, I would win. But then every now and then you guys come across someone. I remember playing many years ago with a listener, Unreal Tournament, and I couldn't win against the guy. Like, he was just ridiculously good. Like, snipe shooting you from midair while he was spinning and jumping, and it's like, nope, okay, well, I'm sorry I can't give you any competition, but normally I'm that guy, but with you, I'm the other guy. I'm the luncheon meat on the battlefield. So, yeah, it really bothers me. All of these, and it's always these. The guys who play shooter games are good at laser tag and paintball as well. Yeah, that's true. I usually will win at laser tag. And I've not played paintball that much, but I usually do pretty good. I played Unreal with him. Let me tell you, Steph brings the bad touch. Yeah. You're cannon fodder in FPS games? Yeah. Yeah. Well, we used to, of course, back in the day with Quake and all of that, I used to get my friends. We'd come over to my place of business where all of the computers were already networked and we'd play. Sometimes we'd play like 2 a.m. So it's a great deal of fun. But yeah, I've had some experience, but nonetheless, there's still some people who are just fantastic. definitely playing Counter-Strike with my old friend, can't even get a kill in. Yeah. Yeah, like, where are you? I don't know, but I just know that I got headshot. It's just terrible. It's terrible. So yeah, those are the kind of odds that you're dealing with. And the odds of you being that guy are very low. I would say I could probably beat, I would be in the top. Listen, I don't want to overpraise myself, and it's not like my skills are perfect, but back in the day, I could win most times. Online games and so on. Like nothing, obviously nothing professional or semi-professional, but just hop in an online game, I'd usually win. But so maybe I'm in the top couple of percent of players, like obviously at a purely amateur level, I'm in the top couple of percent of players, but that ain't good enough in a battlefield. In a battlefield, you could just get killed by accident, right? And you friendly fire. Nobody ever talks about the friendly fire in a battlefield, but friendly fire is a massive issue. It's a massive issue. Was the Pat Tillman? Pat Tillman was a football player who was fighting in Afghanistan, and I think he ended up being killed by friendly fire, if I remember rightly, even though they didn't say that at the beginning. But yeah, I and here's what bothers me so much about the people who make this fucked up propaganda about you have way better odds in war than are factual. Like they give you this pumped up, grandiose, bulletproof delusion. Right. I mean, that was what was so wild about the like the first, what, 15 or 18 minutes of Saving Private Ryan is, you know, some guys like they're just getting shot, like they're just crawling up the beach and just getting shot. You know, I remember the shot, the scene, a very sort of brief snippet where a guy gets shot through his helmet, takes it off, looks at it in wonder, and then gets shot through the head. And that's war, man. Just some asshole 20 miles away pushing a button and blowing you to nothing. So what bothers me the most is the clusterfuck a-holes who put together all of this propaganda. They don't go to war. They don't go to war, right? They're back there doing all their propaganda. They're getting all the other kids to go to war. Harry Brown used to have a thing which said America can only declare war if the sons of congressmen get drafted. Like, that's it, right? I mean, it's a nice way to try and rope the beast. Doesn't really work out that way, but it's a nice sort of theory about how to rope the beast, but just crazy. So yeah, all the people who are producing this propaganda that gives people completely insane a sense of their own actual odds. Well, and of course, I mean, they used to have a pretty strict IQ cutoff for the army. I think that's changing now. And it certainly changed in the Vietnam War. One of the reasons why the Vietnam War turned so bad is they ran out of intelligent people. And they ended up having to recruit people with IQs in the 70s. Like 82, 83, I think, was the cutoff for a long time in the army. And then they had to go down into the 70s. And, you know, people would forget their, you know, their, you'd have these passcodes, like somebody would shout a challenge. You'd have to shout something back to prove you weren't enemies. And they would forget them. And so they'd get shot, or they would forget that other people had the correct passwords and would shoot them. There was a guy in Vietnam who was so dumb, he thought it was hilarious to pull the pins off grenades and roll them into tents so that everyone would run scurrying, and he blew people up that way. And they were called McNamara's morons, right? Robert McNamara was the Secretary of Defense, I think, back then. And they just brought all these people in that were just completely dumb, like just could not function intellectually. And they put them in combat. And of course, you're going up against these super high Q East Asians. And it was just awful. Just awful. Imagine war was just the presidents of the countries fighting each other. Yeah, there's a, what's that song by Chris de Burg? Let's put them in a, let them work it out until they see nothing from nothing. Well, nothing. And hey, boys, tonight we get away to the other side. It's a good song. I was a big Chris de Burg fan for quite a while. I haven't listened to him much lately, but last time I cried. Is a great song. The Risen Lord, also a great haunting song. He's a superb vocalist and sounds just as good live, by the way, and all of that. So, and for some reason, he's been involved in a massive amount of defamation lawsuits. I don't know exactly why. These modern day wars are so dystopian. The trench warfare with grenade drones scare the F out of me. Yeah, can you imagine just being basically followed by some killer drone that just blows you up in the middle of nowhere, and what can you do? What can you do? You dodge one, it's another one right over the horizon, right? Yeah, it's awful. It's awful. And it looks like, you know, the ghost of war is being resurrected, sadly, at the moment. All right. Let me just get to any of the questions. All right. Let me get to your drones. Are kind of like homing pigeons with C4 on the shotgun. C4 shotgun seems to be the solution for them. Well, no, but they dodge like crazy, right? They're insanely fast, right? So it's just attrition, right? I mean, let's say you can get, you know, half the drones that come at you. Well, they just send two drones, right? Or they, right? All right. So why would a family member shut you down the moment you discuss family politics, even if you haven't spoken for 3 years about it? Interestingly, the family member's grandfather died and he stole his mother's inheritance. So much for not needing to discuss family pain. I now believe those who won't talk are seething, waiting to strike. Right. Well, I can tell you the way that I look at it. This will depress and enlighten you and will probably answer most of the questions you have if you have a dysfunctional family. But to be honest, it is going to kind of blow your mind, right? So just hit me with a why if you're ready. Because, you know, I got an hour tonight, so I got to tell you, I'm going to be very compressed here. So hit me. Are you ready? Because I'll answer this question, but you won't like it. You'll like it in the long run. You know, philosophy. Don't worry, it stops hurting later. Don't worry, the boo-boo turns into a muscle later. But it ain't fun at the beginning. So, the question, why would a family member shut you down the moment you discuss family politics, even if you haven't spoken for 3 years about it? And there's a lot of dysfunction in the family. So the purpose of your family is to pass along the dysfunction. That's why they exist. That's what they're for. That's why they've reproduced. In other words, think of the dysfunction as the giant lever that's causing people to have sex and reproduce. So if you understand that the purpose of your family, if it's really dysfunctional, the purpose of your family is to transmit the dysfunction to the next generation, then if you're trying to make that family functional, you're trying to bring reason and evidence and virtue and truth to that family, the dysfunctional virus will attack you as an enemy and will drive you away because it needs to reproduce in peace, or it needs to reproduce in violence and dysfunction. The purpose of your dysfunctional family is to reproduce that dysfunction to the next generation. You go in and try and make them sane and good and healthy and right and noble and virtuous. You're an enemy to the demons that have your family tree in their thrall and are simply using Control-C, Control-V, copy-paste to fuck up the next generation. That's it. That's it. So, to disease, health is a disease. Do you understand? To a disease, health is a disease. So, if you were to go into your family and you were to put laxatives in their dessert, and you were to put diuretics into their soup, and they got really sick and crampy, and you made them eat sick in some way, or you coughed flu-ridden phlegm in their faces, and so on. They'd be like, "Whoa! Of course you're not welcome at family dinner. You keep poisoning us. Of course you're not welcome." Like, would you let someone in your family come over to your family, or someone in your family of origin come over, and every time they came over, you got violently sick for weeks? Would you let them into your house? Would you invite them to break bread with you if every time you ate with them, you ended up throwing up for a week straight? Of course not. Because they would be making you sick. You follow? To sickness, health is a disease. To dysfunction, reason is a predator and an enemy and a sickness and a convulsion and a vomiting and a disease. You are, if you're healthy, and here you're healthy, right? And you listen to the show, you're healthy for the most part, as am I healthy for the most part. You are a sickness to the sickness. So when you say, gee, why would a family member shut you down the moment you discuss family politics? You understand? From their perspective, it's like saying, wait a minute. All I did was cough blood on their children. Why did they hurry me out of the house? Why are they mad at me? I coughed blood on their children. Well, what's the problem? Bruh. I mean, come on. It's just a little blood. Don't they ever eat blood pudding? So you bringing health is you bringing disease. So, of course, they're going to rush you out and hurry you out because you're interfering with the transmission of the illness that they've redefined as health. And because they've redefined illness as health, cure is the disease. So you are in there coughing up blood on their food, poisoning their food. You are there putting mold in their vents. You are there making them sick, making them unwell, making them diseased. So they drive you out to maintain the health of their sickness. You should know this by now. Sorry to be annoying. Sorry to be emphatic, but it's important. It's important. Stop trying to make sick people well. Why would you do that? Why would you try to make sick people well? I mean, the only way that sick people get better is if they admit that they're sick. So if people don't admit that they're sick, they'll fight you like you're poisoning them if you bring reason to their screwed up universes, right? Like, you're disorienting them with health. If somebody were to threaten to inject you with a virus or a drug that would cause you to hallucinate visually and auditorily to the point where you wouldn't know what was real and what was not, you know, full on beautiful mind, Nash stuff, right? You don't know what's real, what's not. You don't know if the person in the room is real. You got to ask someone else if they see it. Maybe they are part of your imagination. You don't know what's real or what's not. If somebody were to inject you with a drug that disoriented you, gave you auditory and visual hallucinations and completely wrecked your sense of reality and trust in yourself, you would view that person as an enemy to be fought at all costs. Wouldn't, how much would you fight to keep an enemy away from injecting you with something that destroyed your sense of reality? Well, if you're healthy and they don't even know that they're irrational or anti-rational, screwed up or messed up, if they don't know how dysfunctional they are, then you coming at them with reason is you assaulting them with unreality and you trying to forcefully inject something into their brains that is going to turn them schizophrenic and hallucinatory and psychotic and deranged. And they will fight tooth and nail against you to survive because the only thing they know is the physics of corruption. And health is a mentally ill hallucination to those enmeshed in the physics of corruption. Don't look at them as people who are making choices. You look at them as people who are possessed by bad ideas. The bad ideas are using the mere flesh to leapfrog to the next generation. And if you get in the way, they'll screw you up. You understand, if you go to a higher mammal, like a wolf or a lion or something like that, an apex predator, you get between a grizzly and her cub, what happens? What happens? They will tear your scalp off. They will rip you apart. They will destroy you. Why? Because you're interfering with the transmission of their genetics by approaching their young. We've all seen this, right? So dysfunction is the offspring of the possessors of minds lost to corruption. If you interfere with the transmission of dysfunction, me with the media, right? If you interfere with the transmission of dysfunction, you are coming between the apex predator and their treasured offspring. Does this help you understand the world? Does this help you make sense of the world and of the people around you? They're not interested in your health because they have been programmed to view your health as a disease and their disease as health. The dysfunctional mindset is using the physical body and the physical mind to transmit itself to the next generation, and it is fiercely guarding its prey. And if you interfere with the predator and its offspring, the predator will attack you until you are dead. So, with that in mind, why would a family member shut you down the moment you discuss family politics, even if you haven't spoken for 3 years about it? Well, if you are spraying a mist into someone's face, it's going to give them permanent hallucinations and destroy their connection to reality. Let's say you haven't done that for 3 years. Why would they be upset about it? I haven't sprayed them in the face with a psychotic generating psychoactive drug for 3 years. Why would they be upset about it? Interestingly, the family's member's grandfather died and he stole the mother's inheritance. So much for not needing to discuss family pain. I now believe those who won't talk are seething, waiting to strike. Yeah. I view people as possessed by bad ideas. Most people. Most people. I don't even, not even most dysfunctional people. Most people are possessed by bad ideas. And the bad ideas are jumping from person and generation to generation. I don't view most of the people I meet as animated by any sort of rational consciousness or objective conscience or virtue or striving for truth. I view them as carriers of an illness called bad thinking or non-thinking or anti-thinking. I mean, come on, man. I shouldn't need to tell anyone how easily programmed people are into hating their fellow man. Not after COVID and the vaccines, right? I mean, come on. This is not something that we need to spend much time on, right? They're not interested in your health. They're not interested in your virtues. They're not interested in your reason. They're not interested in your facts. They're not interested in the truth. They're not interested in your integrity. They view it as a toxic poison that will completely destroy their sense of reality and have them lonely and adrift and psychotic until the end of time. Only a couple of people out of 100 can lose weight and keep it off. And you think that they're going to accept abstract virtues? This is the big thing to remember. 97%, 98% of people who lose weight gain it back and more. Only a few, 1 or 2% of people, maybe 2 or 3% of people, lose weight and keep it off forever, right? Now, fat people kind of hate being fat. And the amount of encouragement they get to lose weight is huge. The amount of positive, oh, did you lose weight? The amount of positive feedback, the amount of personal health benefits, the reduction of back pain, joint pain, knee pain, you name it. Better breath, run upstairs, run around, more energy, more health, better libido, diamond heart, youthful boners, whatever, right? So the amount of positive feedback that people get from losing weight and the amount of health benefits and life quality benefits they get is massive. How many people lose weight and keep it off? One person out of 50? One person out of 25? You think you're going to help make them good? You can't even get them to put down their back and knee destroying cheesecake. If you can't get people to stop eating so much, to not be subject so much to the sin of avarice and greed and gluttony. If you can't even get people to eat less and be healthy, walk around a little, exercise, eat less, eat better. If you can't even get people to be physically healthy, which they get massive positive feedback from, it gives them extra years of their life. Everybody praises them and thinks it's wonderful. And their doctor says, great job. And they've got more energy and more health. If you can't even get them to do that, what on earth makes you think that they will see the evil in themselves and others? You can't even see the fat guy. You can't even get the fat guy to see his own dick, and you want him to see the deep corruption of himself and others and the system and the people and the world? The guy who hasn't seen his feet in 20 years. Because he can't stop eating. You think he's going to look in the mirror and see the demon that's in the heart of all of us? You can't even, most people won't admit they're wrong when there's direct video evidence. Right? I mean, Scott Adams had a whole list of the Trump hoaxes, right? And other media hoaxes and so on. I mean, just take the obvious one. There's the fine people hoax, right? In Charlottesville, that Trump called the white supremacists or the neo-Nazis fine people, which he didn't, of course. And the video is very clear, right? He says, there are fine people on both sides of the debate. He says, I'm not talking about the white supremacists. They should be condemned utterly, right? So, or, you know, people think that Trump, what he tried to say, January 6th, he said, protest peacefully, blah, 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 right? So there's direct video evidence that you can beam into somebody's ass in about half a second, right? Just look at this video, look at these 30 seconds, right? So people can't even admit that they're wrong or have been lied to about something when you can give them direct video evidence in about half a second, which will take them 30 seconds to watch, right? So you give people little tests of, can you process reality at all? Can you process reality at all? 30 seconds. Can you process reality? Can you admit that you're wrong? Give people little tests. But what people do is they keep trying to get people who've never been to the gym to bench press 300 pounds. And I'm like, no, no, no. Can they lift a 2-pound weight? Right? Somebody who's wrong, you say, oh, no, you're wrong about this, right? You're wrong about this. And here's the evidence, right? Now, if somebody can't say, oh, gosh, I guess I really did get fooled by that, right? If somebody can't admit that they're wrong when you have given them direct, physical, tangible, material evidence that's irrefutable, that takes them about 30 seconds to watch and you can beam directly into their phone, why would you talk to them about anything else? All right, so you can't lift 5 pounds. Okay, what about 500 pounds? 750? 300 pounds? 450, 461, 429, 387. It's like, what are you doing? They can't lift 5 pounds. Why would you bother with anyone who can't admit that they're wrong when it takes 30 seconds and it's irrefutable? Whatever it could be. It could be anything on the left or the right or in the middle. It doesn't matter, right? Doesn't matter. So try to bring a little reality to people. And if they won't accept a little reality, how would they accept a big reality? If they can't lift 5 pounds, what makes you think they can lift 500 pounds? And yet everybody avoids this knowledge. We just keep going. And I've done this too. So I've done this too. I'm not speaking from any big superior place here. If they won't listen to little reasons, they won't listen to big reasons. If they won't accept little facts, they won't accept big facts. If they can't lift 500 pounds, don't give them 100 pounds. I mean, you can if you want, but it's kind of pointless. It says, I really try not to hate people due to this reality. Since COVID, it's definitely been hard. I keep my distance because the urge to clear their delusions is strong for me. Right. So the reason why people will suck you into these debates when they have no intention of changing their mind, right? Lord knows, we've all been there, right? We've all been there. Somebody sucks us into a debate, and then we realize they have absolutely no intention of changing their mind. I can't be alone in this. It seems the internet is both porn and denial for the most part, right? So we get sucked into this, right? Now, do you know why we get sucked into this? Because the demons try to get us to argue with them so that we lose respect for the power of reason. Right, so the trolls, the people who invite debate with no intention of changing anything, those trolls, those demons, and I'm not obviously calling them actual demons, it's an analogy, right? But the demons that possess them in a sense are inviting us in to pretend to debate so that we and others see the futility of reason. So that you get frustrated and you view, and also they're there to discredit reason. They're there to discredit reason so that other people look at you and see, rational people, they're easily frustrated and they claim to be empirical, but they don't even know they're being played. Just, you see what I mean? We claim to be so good at identifying truth and reason and evidence, and yet we're so bad so often at seeing when we're being lied to and played, and people have no intention. And to everyone else, it's clear it's a bad faith debate, and we're in there like, no, here's some more facts, and here's some more this, and here's some more that. They're there to discredit reason. They're there to frustrate you and to show their superiority to reason because they have you running around producing all of this data and arguments and facts when they have no intention of changing their mind. No intention. You don't elevate people's view of the power of reason by reasoning with people who can't be reasoned with. Because then you're showing you're anti-empirical and you're not even wise enough to know when someone can't be changed. I remember, I must have been 11 or 12 years old. I had a bird that I had rescued from the wild, and I had to take it downtown. So I have the bird in a cage that I'd borrowed from a friend of mine. A little bird, it was a thrush, I think it was. I had the thrush in the cage, and I was on the bus, and there was this guy who was like, oh, you can't keep a bird in a cage. It's a wild animal. It should be free. No, it broke its wing. It's rescued. I'm trying to fix it, as you can see. And so the guy was just, oh, it's crazy. He doesn't have enough food. You got to clean out the cage. He was just right. And I was answering him and defending my position and what I was doing and all of that. And finally, some guy leaned over and said, don't answer him. He's not interested in any of this. He's just messing with you. Big lesson, right? Why am I defending? Because I shouldn't mention, the guy was like obviously crazy and kind of homeless and smelled and right. So he's just there to troll and frustrate a little kid and to publicly humiliate me because he was a nasty little piece of shit, right? So, and he's like, and people were giving me piteous looks like, why are you debating with a crazy guy? That was one of the biggest, I remember this so vividly. I remember what he looked like. So many years ago, 46, 45 years ago. And everyone's like, why? And it seems so obvious to everyone else, and it wasn't to me, because of course I grew up with a crazy troll, right? More than one, in fact. But why am I debating with, the guy doesn't care about the birds, he doesn't like, and I looked and I was like, yes, of course, this guy doesn't even bathe, he doesn't have a home, like why would he care about a bird? He doesn't even care about himself. If we could only see what trolls look like. But we can. We can. Thank you for the tip. I appreciate that. First tip of the night in locals. If you could help out, I'd appreciate that. You can just tip on the app. Come on, this is great stuff. I know how important it is. I know how helpful it is. But there is. You give people something obvious to find out if they can admit that they're wrong. You don't debate with people who can't admit that they're wrong, unless it's a public debate, right? Like I debate publicly. It wasn't like I was going to change the mind of any of the communists or determinists that I debated, but it's there for other people to see. So it's a little different. It's a public debate. But don't you give people, can you accept this, right? Can you accept this, right? And people get mad about IQ, and I'd say, look, I've interviewed 18 world-renowned experts on the field of intelligence. So here, and if they continue debating, it's like, no, I just gave you the facts. If you're not willing to address them, why would I talk to you? They're there to make reason look helpless, paralyzed, frustrating, and pointless. Don't debate with crazy people. And the way you find out is you give them something small and see if they have the capacity to change their minds. Very, very few people have the capacity to change their minds based on reason and evidence. It's incredibly rare, and yet we wander around, as do I sometimes, right? We wander around bleating like lost little lambs and lost little sheep, trying to reason with everyone. Which says that we are rejecting the evidence that very few people, I'm sure, that, I don't know if there have been studies, maybe there have been, But I did a whole presentation on this called The Death of Reason many years ago, which you should check out if you haven't seen it. It's incredibly important. But people, they don't, vast majority of people have no intention of changing their minds. They're called right fighters. They just fight to be in the right. Doesn't matter what the facts are. They won't surrender. They won't back down. They won't reason. They won't think. They won't accept evidence. They won't process data. They won't do any of that. Thank you for the tip. They won't do any of that. They're not interested. They're there to be right. They're there to show off. They're there to be dominant. They're there to win, no matter what expense to their culture or their society. And that's most people. And we know that. We know that. We know that growing up. We know that in school. We know that when we corrected our teachers. We know that when we debated with our families. We know that. So why don't we live like we know that? Because we keep getting drawn into this public spectacle of reason is futile, reason is futile, reason is futile. If I'd have stayed in politics, I could have destroyed the reputation of reason for a generation or two. Well, we'll talk about that another time, but I'm sure that don't need to. I'm sure that's pretty obvious and pretty evident. Debating with crazy people is like wriggling in quicksand. No, but it's worse than that, because it's showing that reason denies reality. So we say, oh, you got to accept reality. You got to accept the truth. Okay, but the truth is that few people surrender to reason and facts. So we're saying it's a public display of rank hypocrisy. It's a public display of rank hypocrisy. Because we say, well, you got to know the truth. You got to think. You got to reason. You got to be empirical. And yet we keep debating with people who have no interest in reason and evidence. So where's our empiricism? Where's our facts-based? It's a way of saying that the reasonable, quote, reasonable people are crazier than the crazy people. Because the crazy people don't have this whole reason and empiricism thing, fact-based thing. And the rational guy who claims to be empirical doesn't even seem to notice that the person he's debating is anti-rational. Right? If you saw the guy, he says, I'm a top gymnastics coach. I'm fantastic at gymnastics coaching. I'm ready to take any athlete in gymnastics all the way to the Olympics. Olympic gold, baby. And then he kept encouraging a guy in a wheelchair, permanently in a wheelchair, you know, paralyzed from the neck down. You got to get into gymnastics, man. I want to be your gymnastics coach. Together we can go all the way to the gold. Right? You would look at that gymnastics coach and you'd say, well, that guy's crazy. He's a gymnastics coach who's trying to get Christopher Reeve post-horse accident to be an Olympic gold medalist. What is the matter with this guy? Like, I want to coach you into reason and evidence. And I'm really into facts, reason, and evidence. Empiricism. And it's like, you don't even notice this guy's in a wheelchair. He's got no functional observing ego, no higher standards, no reason, no, right? If you want to show the power of reason and empiricism, you test whether people can change their minds before you engage in debates with them. Right? Don't you test whether people can change their, have the capacity, knowing that most people don't at all have the capacity or the willingness to change their minds? Wouldn't you test that? Yeah, the show is 3055. The show is 3055, The Death of Reason from, gosh, when was that? That was a ways back. Yeah, 2015. So 9 years ago, almost, right? 9 years ago. Hit me with why, if you have accepted this, you test people's capacity to change their minds and refuse to engage with people who don't listen to reason. Do you test whether people can listen to reason and refuse to engage with people who don't listen to reason? Hit me with a why, if you got this show of mine from 9 years ago, right? And have accepted the facts. Have you become rational about most people's anti-rationality? Have you become empirical at the fact that most people reject empiricism? Have you deeply absorbed and thought about the reality that few people deeply absorb and think about anything? I refuse to engage if they don't listen. Yeah, for sure. Now, of course, but you feel this compulsion to debate. Yeah, I got to get in there and debate, right? That's a kind of demonology. It's a kind of cocking your finger so you run off a cliff and you discredit reason. See, they can't discredit reason by reasoning with you because you're better at it. And they can't discredit reason by providing counter evidence because you're an empiricist and you have the facts, right? So how do they discredit reason? They lure you into fighting with them, which completely destroys anybody's respect for your reason and empiricism. Because everyone else can see that this person can't be reasoned with and you're trying to reason with them, which means you're not rational. You see, they win either way. You understand? That's the way they win. If they can't deplatform you, they'll try and troll you into banging your head against the wall saying, I'm clear-headed. I'm factual. I'm rational, right? So I just wanted to point that out. This show helps a lot. Dale Carnegie's books helped a lot too. How to Win Friends and Influence People. All right. I didn't know he was a philosopher. But yeah, if you accept reason and evidence, accept reason and evidence. It's a tautology, but it's really, really important. If you're going to accept reason and evidence, the first thing you need to accept is almost everybody rejects reason and evidence. If you can't accept that, don't call yourself rational. And if you can't accept that, don't call yourself empirical. The other people can't admit that they're wrong. Well, yes, and you can't admit that most people can't admit that they're wrong. So you fight with everyone and lose all the time. And it's not just you who loses. This is why the quicksand analogy is not complete. If in quicksand, you're the one who, but you're discrediting reason for everyone. You discredit reason for everyone because everyone sees you fighting and they see the anti-rational person winning. Funny game. The only way to win is not to play. That's what people said to me when I had my thrush on the bus going downtown when I was 11 in 1977. Often people send you the evidence you sent them 20 years ago, climate change, forgetting it was you who told them. Then when we have our next debate, they'll say, oh, this is your new climate change, even though you were validated about that. Oh, this is your new climate change. I don't get that unbelievable. Well, why is it unbelievable? It's not unbelievable. Stop unbelieving that which is completely obvious and truthful and factual and empirical and proven all throughout history, all across the world. Unbelievable. Is there still gravity today? Unbelievable. It's not unbelievable. What do you mean it's not unbelievable? It's totally believable. Live it. Accept it. Believe it. Be empirical. Yeah, it helped me to accept people's biases without kicking over their beehive too much. Accept it. Their bias is their own emotion. No interest in the truth. They are vessels by which anti-rationality reproduces itself. Can you believe that the left was hypocritical? Yeah. Hypocrisy is not a bug, it's a feature of power. The king can be hypocritical, then nobody can call him out. That's how you know he's powerful. I mean, the police can lie to you, you can't lie to the police. It's a function of power, right? I can't believe that people who thirst for power use power. I can't believe that people who really want drugs actually take those drugs. Unbelievable, right? No, it's not. Yeah, so stop with this unbelievable. That's a form of chest-thumping pomposity. Sorry to be annoying, but it's fact, right? Stop saying unbelievable about the utterly predictable. Can you believe this guy eats 4,000 calories a day, he doesn't exercise, and he keeps gaining weight? Unbelievable! It's not unbelievable. It's actually inevitable. Stop saying unbelievable to things that are entirely predictable. The sun rose again this morning? Unbelievable! No, it's not. No, it's not. Dems are the real racists. Unbelievable. So hypocritical. I was like, no, it's not. Maybe it's us who are wrong being right 10 years in advance. Well, I mean, this is kind of what I got tired of, was just being right about so much, but so far ahead that you're called evil or crazy or insane, and then everybody like completely accepts that, right? Later. And they never circle back and say, gosh, you were right. I'm so sorry for all the arrows to your back. Like all the conversations that are happening now in the world were things that I was talking about 15 years ago. It's just, you just get tired of being out front all the time. And it's one thing if you're out front and you get some praise for being innovative and some respect and recognition, but you don't get that, right? You get attacked and backstabbed and betrayed, and right. And then they just accept what you said later on, right? Without ever circling back and thanking you. Or, I didn't watch The Death of Reason, but got there on my own during COVID. Yes, looking forward to watching it. Yeah, it's really, it really is important. It really is important. So for instance, FDR, let me just go FDR podcasts, FDRpodcast.com. All right. So, people were kind of shocked that the FDA appeared to be somewhat corrupt, right? So, 12 years ago, I did a show with Dr. Mary Ruwart, A Doctor's View of Obamacare. There was that one. I also did, this is 2009, right? So 15 years ago, right? 2009, 15 years ago, I did an interview on the corruption of the FDA with Dr. Mary Ruwart, like 15 years ago. So how much were my listeners prepared for COVID and corruption? 15 years ago. People are like, I can't believe that the gatekeepers appear to be slightly corrupt. It's like, it's 15 years ago, November 7th, 2009. The show's number is 1504. People are like, oh my God, the FDA appears to be slightly compromised. 15 years ago. I mean, geez, what's the point, right? Steph, do you know the painter Arthur Kwan Lee? He said in a recent podcast that you are way ahead of the curve and red-pilled many people. He called you a good man, but wished you were not an atheist. Well, if it's any consolation, I wish I wasn't an atheist either. I would like very much to be religious. I would very much like to accept Jesus and God and all of the things that I grew up with. I would be very happy to not be an atheist, but philosophy is not about what makes you happy, it's about what is true. And the more true it is, in general, at least in the short run, the less happy you're going to be. So I share his wish. I share his wish. If I had some objectively verifiable religious experience tomorrow, I would come out of it with a spring in my step and a smile in my heart. Because it would mean I would get to spend the rest of eternity with my wife and daughter over time. It would mean that I would get to live forever. It would mean that there was a force up there and out there looking out for me. It would mean that I would have access to divine wisdom. It would be a glorious and beautiful and wonderful thing to be religious. And I very much envy the people in a way who can believe it. But I have tied myself to the raft of philosophy, and sometimes I get to steer it, and sometimes we just go down a waterfall together, and I cross my fingers. And it is, you know, there was a lot of Christian scientists felt that by studying physics and by studying biology, they were studying the mind of God. And to the degree to which I have managed to prove rational secular ethics that happen to accord with the rules of God, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not assault, thou shalt not rape. The degree to which UPB coincides with the rules of just about every major religion is because I've resisted God in the realm of ethics. I've been able to prove the ethics that God commanded. Will you go see the eclipse Monday? No, I don't see why. I don't see why I would. I mean, you have to watch it through a box and a shadow and I just watch it on TV. I remember there was an eclipse when I was a kid in Canada. The school got dark and then it got bright again. And it's like, eh. Although it's interesting that, what was Revelations? The sea shall turn red. I think that happened last year. There will be an earthquake and then there will be an eclipse. And there was an earthquake recently. Well, there was one in Taiwan and wasn't there one today in New York State or something? And there'll be an eclipse. So, oh well. Hope there's still time to convert if it turns out to be the case. Hey, you know, I'm an empiricist. We'll see what happens. All right. Well, listen, I said I'll do a short show. And so I have. So I really, really do want to thank you for coming by tonight. We'll do a longer show, of course, Sunday, 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. We'll have a nice... Do you pray or meditate? I wouldn't say that I formally meditate, but I do lie back and think, both in the morning and in the evening. I spend at least half an hour lying in a comfortable position, thinking about my day, thinking about the world, thinking about my intention, thinking about my purpose. Global demographic collapse? I am. This weird thing about low birth rates just completely puzzling to me. I don't get it at all, but there's absolutely nothing wrong with low birth rates, especially with AI and automation and robots and so on. There's nothing wrong with low birth rates. People freaking out. The only reason that low birth rates are a freak out to people is because of democracy and being outbred and therefore outvoted by other groups. So, missed the show. Just showed up. Busy day. I'm sorry about that. It's a good show. We'll of course put it out tonight for the donors, but thanks everyone. If there's any last tips you'd like to drop in, you can do it here on the app, on Rumble, on Locals, on DLive. You can do it at freedomain.com/donate. Would be lovely, lovely, lovely to get your help. Remember, we've got another guy to do some work for us, which I think will be very helpful and very positive. If you're enjoying the new clips, please let Jared know. We're testing out, extracting little bits here, like 50 seconds, 45 seconds, 90 seconds, maybe from shows and making them jazzy and snazzy and cell phone friendly with text and all of that. So if you are finding those helpful or interesting, please let us know. Thank you so much, says Jared, so much to everyone who tipped again and are regular supporters. It's wonderful to work for the show and you. Interesting. Thank you. I find meditation or deep thought to be so helpful in many ways. Yeah, I'm not trying to get to a state of mindlessness or blankness or nirvana. I'm trying to think very deeply and purposefully about what I'm trying to do, because what I'm trying to do is so much against what is that I need to check in with some sort of universal phenomenon of philosophy and principles in order to have the resolution to continue to swim against the current in such a fashion. All right. Thank you, everyone, so much. Have yourselves a glorious and wonderful evening. And I will talk to you guys Sunday. Thank you again for your support. If you're listening to this later, of course, freedomain.com/donate, and you get access. Stephbot AI is back up and running where you can query me in whatever native language you choose, and I will almost certainly respond. And it's a very, very good. It's been trained on a whole bunch of podcasts, a whole bunch of books, and all that kind of stuff as well. What are your thoughts on Jay Dyer? Would you debate him again? I'm not sure. I mean, I'm not sure that people will... You know, I'll ask this question another time. Maybe we'll talk about this Sunday. I am getting invites to go on bigger shows again, and I'm still half and half about that. But we can talk about that on Sunday. I'll get your feedback on that, because I'm really enjoying what it is that we're doing here. And the cost benefit doesn't really seem to be worth it to me. But if you have any thoughts, we'll talk about that on Sunday. Maybe we'll make the second half donor only on Sunday. All right. Thanks, everyone. Lots of love. Take care. Have a wonderful, wonderful evening. I'll talk to you soon. Bye.